bonita, al que trabaja lo ayuda. Si no mira, al que trabaja lo ayuda. Si no mira, las lanas de tu pollera te marchitan.
Y vamos a pasar ahora al último tema de este bloque, Ay Mama a capela, con una canción quebradeña, esta sí es de La Quebrada, y se titula Mal Das.
Maldas presumido, maldas presumido, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? Maldas presumido, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? En un tarrito de barro te ofrecí mi corazón, yo te di mi corazón, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? En un tarrito de barro te ofrecí mi corazón, yo te di mi corazón, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? Casi como amigos, casi nunca fuimos, casi que te digo que me voy con vos. Casi como amigos, casi nunca fuimos, porque no vivimos juntitos los dos. En un ojito de parra te escribí mi bendición, te expliqué mi situación, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? En un ojito de parra te escribí mi bendición, te expliqué mi situación, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? Meto en una ollita todo el miedo junto pa' que el cariñito se me vuelva amor. Meto en una ollita todo el miedo junto pa' que calentito se te vaya vos. Para saber vivir hay que ser un poco tonto, hay que ser un poco tonto, hay que así soy yo. Para saber vivir hay que ser un poco tonto, hay que ser un poco tonto, sí que así soy yo. Maldas presumido, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo? Maldas presumido, ¿quién te habrá querido antes que yo?
Muchísimas gracias. Hasta el próximo sábado. Un saludo muy cariñoso a toda la audiencia latinoamericana, un abrazo a todos los compañeros del colectivo. María Néder, desde La Quebrada de Humahuaca, Argentina. ¿Qué?
manera llegamos al final de un programa más de Tiempo de Mujeres en Alternativa Latinoamericana. Emitimos desde la radio de la Universidad de Guelph, CFRU 93.3 FM, y por internet para el mundo por www.cfru.ca y por nuestros blogs en mujeresporlademocracia.blogspot.com y alternativalatinoamericana.blogspot.com. Se despiden de ustedes desde Argentina nuestro amigo y compañero el doctor Norberto Emmerich, doctor en ciencia política; desde Colombia nuestros amigos y compañeros periodistas del colectivo Radicales Libres con Silvia Oviedo, Leandro Murillo y Luis Alberto Castaño; desde la ciudad de Los Palacios, mi querido México, la amiga y compañera Daniela Villegas, periodista y maestra en estudios de género; y desde esta cabina de radio, nuestra queridísima Madeline Speed, mi compañero Sergio Pochón y quien les habla, su amiga Hilda Venegas. Nos despedimos deseándoles una noche de paz y justicia social para nuestros pueblos, que si el presente es de lucha, el futuro es nuestro. Gracias y hasta la próxima.
My name is Maheen and you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
Attention comrades of Canadian DIY communities and underground art scenes.
This is our house, Weird Distro, the first and only not-for-profit online store for Canadian-made cassettes, LPs, CDs, and objet d'art.
One stop, one package, one massive country.
Run by Weird Canada volunteers.
For music to hold in your hands and your hearts, check out Weird Distro at distro.weirdcanada.com.
Hey, how you doing? My radio name is Mac D, and I've been hanging around CFRU for a long, long time. Because it's fun. I started off working the equipment, producing shows, and then moved into doing my own show. Along the way, I've learned about local artists and their music, and other artists and music I never would have heard of or listened to before. I'm still here, still doing shows, still having fun. If what I do sounds like something you'd enjoy, visit us on the second floor of the University Center and find out what CFRU has to offer you.
It's that time of year again. Kazoo Fest is back from April 8th to the 12th with bands like Deerhoof,
Absolutely Free,
No Joy,
Phaedra,
Scott Merritt,
Motem,
Homeshake,
Lito Pimienta,
Blimp Rock,
Fetnat,
Alana Gurr,
Tyson and the Trepids,
Fist City,
Squeezy C,
Black Spirituals,
Tyvek,
Her Harbor,
and more than 25 other musical performances.
Also featuring visual art installations,
dance and multimedia performances,
the Print Expo,
and ending with a pancake breakfast.
Kazoo Fest is presented by Wellington Brewery,
The Cornerstone,
Bookshelf,
Mike Von Den at Home Group Realty,
and CFRU. For accessibility information and further venue details, please visit the website at www.kazookazoo.ca.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
I am a representative of the General Headquarters staff of Orglina Heron, the IRA. I don't see any merit in discussing individuals as targets. Suffice it to say that the people who legislate for the terror in Ireland know well that they all remain targets. And I'm sure that Mrs. Thatcher, when she goes down upon her knees with a mirror checking underneath her car every morning, remembers the terror she inflicted on Ireland.
We're not going to be firing yet, are we, Van?
Our strategy is that through the effective use of guerrilla warfare and through continually maintaining an effective fighting force, we will eventually sap the political will of the British government to remain in Ireland. If the British government were prepared to show even one iota of leadership and were to begin moves to disengage from this country, then the conflict would cease.
His eyes, they closed, and his last breath spoke
you'd seen all to be seen. A life once full, now an empty vase, with the blossoms on his early grave. Walk away, me boy, walk away, me boy, and by morning we'll be free. Wipe that golden tear from your mother dear, and raise what's left of the flag for me. Then the rosary beads, count them, one, two, three, fell apart as they hit the floor. In our garb of black, we must pay respect to the colour we're born to mourn. Walk away, me boys, walk away, me boys, by morning we'll be free. Wipe the golden tear from your mother dear, that's what's left of the flag for me. What's left of the flag for me?
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried. And, you know, I hope your hangovers from St. Patrick's Day have worn off by now, brothers and sisters, because, of course, once again, this is going to be my St. Patrick's Day show. Even though I know that just happened earlier this Tuesday. So, you know, it's a ways in the past now. But, you know, it's all good. So we're going to talk a little bit about some aspects of the class struggle, the anti-imperialist struggle of the Irish people against the British Empire. That's what we're going to talk about here tonight. Because once again, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, it really, as somebody of Irish descent myself, it really drives me bleeding mental. Let's just say that. That basically all St. Patrick's Day is, all like any, well, for that matter, all Ireland is ever really associated with in popular culture here in Canada and the States is pretty much getting drunk off your ass. That is the stereotype, and it really drives me mental every year that, you know, we just see like everybody just going out and getting trashed out of their minds and wearing stupid t-shirts saying, "Kiss me, I'm Irish," and all that jazz. Drives me nuts, especially seeing my own ancestors. We came to Canada in the 1840s. As refugees from what can only be described as genocide that was being waged by the British government against the Irish people back then. We came pretty much only with the shirts on our backs. You know, we were fleeing, of course, from what is popularly described as the Irish famine, which took place at that time, which, true enough, there was a blight of the potato crop at that time. But that blight, of course, was exacerbated by the fact that the British Empire kept exploiting Ireland. It kept pumping food out of Ireland instead of bringing it in to help starving people. And more or less what they were trying to do, it became part of their colonial project to depopulate Ireland. That was seriously contemplated by the British government at that time. They wanted to get the Irish people out. They wanted to get settlers in. People who they could control, who they could rely on to, you know, dominate Ireland, keep control over the land. And while they were extracting more and more food resources from Ireland as the Irish people themselves starved, they also brought in thousands and thousands of soldiers to facilitate that process. So it was all by force. You know, and all kinds of draconian laws were introduced. You know, it was basically rule by terror. That was what took place then. And that's the reason why my family is in Canada today. These are important things to remember, especially when we remember what I talked about last week on the show. Talked about how when a lot of these people from not just Ireland, but many oppressed nationalities within Europe, how when they came to North America, they effectively were forced to conform to this stereotype of whiteness, where, you know, they became part effectively of the colonial project. They had to conform to the demands, the, you know, this kind of racial identity, which turned them into being complicit into the, you know, the colonial project of beating down indigenous people and, you know, repressing African Americans and what have you. They became part of the colonial establishment. You know, and you saw this, you know, certainly this has not been lost on Irish activists who continue fighting against British rule in Ireland. When Bernadette Devlin, who's like a major activist in that regard, came to New York City in 1970. And, you know, she got all kinds of support, you know, from the Irish American community. But when she saw how Irish Americans in New York City were behaving towards African Americans and the kind of racism and the kind of bigotry they were displaying, she basically said, yeah, this is the same kind of bigotry that our people are suffering in Northern Ireland today at the hands of the British and at the hands of, like, the Unionists and the various proxy forces that the British have in Northern Ireland. You know, this is the same kind of, you're doing the same thing to African Americans that our people are suffering in Ireland. And yet you're claiming you're on our side. So when she was given the keys to the city by the Irish American mayor of New York at the time, she took that key to the city and gave it to the Black Panthers as a symbolic gesture of solidarity, because she knew who was truly on her side. And certainly throughout the Irish struggle against British rule in Northern Ireland, and you know, there really has been a lot of solidarity between the IRA and various groups that were fighting the British occupation and the Palestinians, you know, the PLO, the PFLP, and the various organizations fighting against the Israeli apartheid regime in Palestine, and by the ANC and various groups that were fighting against apartheid in South Africa. So you see a lot of solidarity between different groups and organizations fighting for liberation. You know, these are the true heroes, you know, the true groups that really the Irish people stood in solidarity with in their fight against British rule, and still express a lot of solidarity with today. You know, there really is a strong tradition of in certainly the Irish activists standing in solidarity with Palestine. They still do. That's very important to remember. So just to kind of follow up on this, I want to play just what Bernadette Devlin actually said when she addressed racism among Irish Americans. And so I'm going to play that clip for you right now. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
If the Irish American community became too involved in our struggle against oppression, it might raise some questions as to the contradictions within their own body politic in America. Particularly here in Boston, there is nothing sadder to people struggling against oppression in Ireland to look towards Boston City and see our people. We know how they got here. We know the oppression they fled from Ireland in various generations to get to this city, being used to oppress the black people of this city. People tell me I don't understand the situation. They tell me blacks are lazy, they don't want to work, they want to lower the standard of education. In fact, they tell me all the things I was brought up to hear about myself, things Protestant people said about Catholic people in Belfast. And I think that's part of it too. I mean, if they really understood what was happening in Ireland, they would get themselves sorted out and stand on the right side here, because we identify very closely in our struggle for equality and our struggle against oppression. In fact, the whole inspiration of our civil rights movement 10 years ago came from the black movement of America. And it looks to us from where we stand at home that our people are being oppressed with the active assistance of our people. We find that very sad.
In 1803 we sailed out to sea, out from the sweet town of Derry. For Australia bound, if we didn't all drown, the marks of our feathers we carried. In the rusty iron chains we cried for our wains, our good women we left in sorrow. As the mainsails unfurled, our curses we hurled on the English and thoughts of tomorrow. At the mouth of the foil, bid farewell to the soil, as down below decks we were lying. O'Doherty screamed, woken out of a dream by a vision of bold Robert Dyer. The sun burned cruel as we dished out the gruel. Dan O'Connor was down with a fever. 60 rebels today bound for Botany Bay. How many will reach their receiver? Them to hell as our bow fought to swell, our ship danced like a moth in the firelight. White horses rode high as the devil passed by, taking souls to Hades by twilight. 5 weeks out to sea, we were now 43, we buried our comrades each morning. In our own slime, we were lost in the time, endless night without dawn. Back home in Derry. Oh, I wish I was back home in Derry.
Van Diemen's Land is a hell for a man to end out his whole life in slavery. Where the climate is raw and the gun makes the law, neither wind nor rain care for bravery. 20 years have gone by, I've ended my bond. My comrades go swat behind me. A rebel I came, I'm still the same. On the cold winds of the night you will find me.
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Christy Moore with Back Home in Derry, which is a very iconic song that captures just what Irish people really went through. In that case, that was Irish rebels who rose up against Britain in the 18th century. A song about them being exiled to Australia, you know, by force. And, you know, being put on basically on this prison ship and shipped out to this foreign land, you know, in penal servitude. I mean, that's more or less what happened. And you know, there's a long history of this happening, like where, you know, British repression in Ireland, you know, drove people away from the land to North America, to Australia, to other parts of the world. You know, you even had a situation in the 17th and 18th centuries where Irish people were actually enslaved and shipped on slave ships to places like Barbados and other places, British colonies in the Caribbean, you know, because they stood up against colonialism. And as I said before, the tragic thing is, in the end, some of these people were effectively used to reinforce colonialism and racist colonial rule in places like the United States, in places like Australia. And, you know, even though they were oppressed in Ireland, they were driven away from Ireland and they were, the victims of imperialism. You know, and to a large extent still are. I mean, parts of Ireland, of course, are still occupied by Britain. You know, and people still exist on the margins of society there. They still exist in oppression. They still live in ghettos. That's still the case in Northern Ireland. You know, and the resistance still goes on. You know, resistance still does go on against British rule in Northern Ireland. You know, it's not as intense now in terms of like fighting in the streets and car bombs and things like this. But at the same time, it still goes on. You know, it's not over. And I really want to mention who wrote that song that Christy Moore sang. That has so much history to it. The author of that song originally was a poem written by Bobby Sands, who himself, I've talked about this before on this show, but I think it's been a while. Bobby Sands was a member of the IRA. He was part of the resistance movement against British rule in Northern Ireland. And he was sent to prison because of that. He was captured by the British authorities. He was sent to prison in the H blocks of Longcash prison in Belfast. And that was there when he and his fellow prisoners resisting the terrible conditions that they were in. They went on hunger strike. He was the first of those hunger strikers to die, to give his life, really for the cause of the liberation of his people. He was willing to go that far. But before, of course, he went, he just left behind an immense legacy of poetry and songs and all these things, which really showed the humanity of this man who was fighting, taking a stand against colonialism, fighting against imperialism that had really taken his land and oppressed his people. And he had an immense historical awareness. You know, he knew that he was part of a tradition of resistance against British colonialism that went back hundreds of years. And he saw himself as part of that tradition. You know, and he was fighting for the liberation of his people, just like Wolfe Tone, just like James Connolly and all these other Irish revolutionaries had in the past. You know, and that's the situation, that's what he situated himself in. So I'm going to go into another song, and after I come back, I'm going to read you one of his many, many poems just to capture who he was and what he was fighting for. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Now, you also talk about who the actual terrorists of the Anglo-Irish conflict are.
Yes.
And in the next show, we're talking about many of the historical aspects. Mm-hmm. Who are, in your opinions, mm-hmm. the actual terrorists?
We don't give our opinions, because everyone has an opinion and nothing good happens if it's merely an exchange of opinion. But what we do is provide facts. And it is a fact that of the 173 children murdered during the Anglo-Irish conflict, the most recent one, all but 20 of them were murdered by British forces. That's not an opinion, that's a fact. The record is available.
Let's get that statistic again.
Of the 173 murders of children, 153 of them were murdered by British forces, on 20 of them, and those 20 are important. 20 were murdered by Irish Republican forces, and they can be condemned. They should be condemned for the murder of the 20, but the ratio is 8.5 to 1. The British are the terrorists, and yet they're the ones who denounced terrorism.
And this would be regular or SAS troops who were in British soldiers, occupied?
Yes, British soldiers, SAS, all kinds of spook agencies, and the murder gangs that they direct.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and as I promised, here's a piece by Bobby Sands. This is called The Lark and the Freedom Fighter. My grandfather once said that the imprisonment of the lark is a crime of the greatest cruelty, because the lark is one of the greatest symbols of freedom and happiness. He often spoke of the lark. He often spoke of the spirit of the lark, relating to a story of a man who incarcerated one of his loved friends in a small cage. The lark, having suffered the loss of her liberty, no longer sang her little heart out. She no longer had anything to be happy about. The man who had committed the atrocity, as my grandfather called it, demanded that the lark should do as he wished. That was to sing her heart out, to comply with his wishes and change herself to suit his pleasure or benefit. The lark refused, and the man became angry and violent. He began to pressurize the lark to sing, but inevitably he received no result. So he took more drastic steps. He covered the cage with a black cloth, depriving the bird of sunlight. He starved it and left it to rot in a dirty cage, but the bird still refused to yield, and then the man murdered it. As my grandfather rightly stated, the lark had spirit, the spirit of freedom and resistance. It longed to be free, and died before it would conform to the tyrant who tried to change it with torture and imprisonment. I feel that I have something in common with that bird and her torture, imprisonment, and final murder. She had a spirit, which is not commonly found, even among us so-called superior beings, humans. Take an ordinary prisoner. His main aim is to make his period of imprisonment as easy and as comfortable as possible. The ordinary prisoner will in no way jeopardize a single day of his remission. Some will even grovel, crawl, and inform on other prisoners to safeguard themselves or to speed up their release. They will comply to the wishes of their captors, and unlike the lark, they will sing when told to and jump high when told to move. Although the ordinary prisoner has lost his liberty, he is not prepared to go to extremes to regain it, nor to protect his humanity. He settles for a short date of release. Eventually, if incarcerated long enough, he becomes institutionalized, becoming a type of machine, not thinking for himself, his captors dominating and controlling him. That was the intended fate of the lark in my grandfather's story, but the lark needed no changing, nor did it wish to change, and died making that point. This brings me directly back to my own situation. I feel something in common with that poor bird. My position is in total contrast to that of an ordinary conforming prisoner. I am a political prisoner, a freedom fighter. Like the lark, I too have fought for my freedom, not only in captivity, where I now languish, but also while on the outside, where my country is held captive. I have been captured and imprisoned, but like the lark, I too have seen the outside of the wire cage. I am now in H Block, where I refuse to change to suit the people who oppress, torture, and imprison me, and who wish to dehumanize me. Like the lark, I need no changing. It is my political ideology and principles that my captors wish to change. They have suppressed my body and attacked my dignity. If I were an ordinary prisoner, they would pay little, if any, attention to me, knowing that I would conform to their institutional whims. I have lost over 2 years' remission. I care not. I have been stripped of my clothes and locked in a dirty, empty cell where I have been starved, beaten, and tortured. And like the lark, I fear I may eventually be murdered. But dare I say it, similar to my little friend, I have the spirit of freedom that cannot be quenched by even the most horrendous treatment. Of course I can be murdered, but while I am alive, I remain what I am, a political prisoner of war, and no one can change that. Haven't we plenty of larks to prove that? Our history is heartbreakingly littered with them, the McSweeneys, the Goggins, the Stags. Will there be more in H Block? I dare not conclude without finishing my grandfather's story. I once asked him, whatever happened to the wicked man who had imprisoned, tortured, and murdered the lark? Son, he said, one day he caught himself on one of his own traps, and no one would assist him to get free. His own people scorned him and turned their backs on him. He grew weaker and weaker, and finally toppled over to die upon the land which he had marred with such blood. The birds came and extracted their revenge by picking his eyes out, and the larks sang like they never sang before. Grandfather, I said, could that man's name have been John Bull?
I'm 90 miles from Dublin town. I'm in the Hedge Block Sound.
to help you understand me plight, the story now I'll tell. I'm on the blanket protest, my efforts must not fail, for I'm joined by men and women in Bekesh and Armagel. It all began one morning I was dragged to Castlereagh, and though it was 3 years ago, it seems like yesterday. For 3 days kicked and beaten, I then was forced to sign confessions that convicted me of crimes that were not mine. Sentenced in a Diplock court, my protest it began. I could not wear their prison gear, I was a blanket man. I'll not accept their status, I'll not be criminalized. That's the issue in the blocks for which we give our lives. Over there in London town, oh, how they'd laugh and sneer if they could only make us wear their loathsome prison gear. Prisoners of war is what we are, and that we must remain. The blanket protest cannot end till status we're again. I've been beaten round the romper room because I won't say sorry. I've been frog marched down the landing and dragged back by the hair. I've suffered degradation, humility and pain. Still the spirit does not falter, British torture is in vain. I've been held in scalding water while my skin with ex-grubs was tore. I've been scratched and cut from head to foot, then thrown out on the floor. I've suffered mirror searches, been probed by drunken bears. I've heard my comrades cry and scream, then utter useless prayers. Now with the news that's coming in, our protest must not fail. For now we're joined by 30 girls in Armagh women's jail. So pay attention, Irish men and Irish women too, and show the Free State rulers that their silence will not do. Though it's 90 miles to Dublin town, it seems so far away. There's more attention to our plight in the USA. Now you've heard the story of this filthy living hell. Remember, 90 miles away, I'm still in the Hedgeblock cell.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and I want to read to you right now from the journal that Bobby Sands kept for 17 days while he was on hunger strike in the prison in Northern Ireland, in Long Cache prison. And this is the journal which he kept for. He was ultimately to go on hunger strike for about 60 days before he died, before he gave his life on that strike. And better than anything I can, basically any explanation I can give, this entry really tells you what it's all about. So I'm going to start with this. This is March. This is Sunday, the 1st of March, 1981. He starts his journal. I'm standing on the threshold of another trembling world. May God have mercy on my soul. My heart is very sore because I know that I have broken my poor mother's heart, and my home is struck with unbearable anxiety. But I have considered all the arguments and tried every means to avoid what has become the unavoidable. It has been forced upon me and my comrades by 4.5 years of stark inhumanity. I am a political prisoner. I am a political prisoner because I am a casualty in a perennial war that has been fought between the oppressed Irish people and an alien, oppressive, unwanted regime that refuses to withdraw from our land. I believe and stand by the God-given right of the Irish nation to sovereign independence and the right of any Irish man or woman to assert this right in armed revolution. That is why I am incarcerated, naked, and tortured. Foremost in my tortured mind is the thought that there can never be peace in Ireland until the foreign, oppressive British presence is removed, leaving all the Irish people as a unit to control their own affairs and determine their own destinies as a sovereign people, free in mind and body, and separate and distinct physically, culturally, and economically. I believe I am but another of those wretched Irishmen born of a risen generation with a deeply rooted and unquenchable desire for freedom. I am dying not just to attempt to end the barbarity of H Block or to gain the rightful recognition of a political prisoner, but primarily because what is lost in here is lost for the Republic and those wretched oppressed whom I am deeply proud to know as the risen people. There is no sensation today, no novelty that October 27th brought. The usual screws were not working. The slobbers and would-be desperates no doubt will be back again tomorrow, bright and early. I wrote some more notes to the girls of Armagh today. There is so much I would like to say to them about their courage, determination, and unquenchable spirit of resistance. They are to be what Countess Markovitz, Anne Devlin, Marianne McCracken, Marie McSweeney, Betsy Gray, and all those other Irish heroines are to us all. And of course, I think of Anne Parker, Laura Crawford, Rosemary Bleakley, and I'm ashamed to say I cannot remember all their sacred names. Mass was solemn, the lads, as ever, brilliant. I ate the statutory weekly bit of fruit last night. As fate had it, it was an orange, and the final irony, it was bitter. The food is being left at the door. My portions, as expected, are quite larger than usual, or those which my cellmate Malachy is getting.
Oh, I'm a rascal. It's a crime. lights the sadly way. She salutes 10 Irish martyrs, the bravest of the brave. Joe McDonald, heart and vessel, for a place in the top of school. They gave their lives for freedom. But Thomas McAleen. Divine from free terry, you are the last to die. With your nine brave companions, with the martyr death you lie, your souls cry out, remember, our deaths were not in vain. So fight out and make our homeland a nation once again.
Okay, sorry to cut that a bit short. That was Irog with actually two songs talking about the 10 honoring Bobby Sands and the other hunger strikers who gave their lives for the liberation of Northern Ireland and struggle against British colonialism. And the IRA will set them free, which of course is a song which is from that same the same tradition, really. And we're put out around the same time. So, of course, what we're talking about here is the hunger strikes against British rule, which took place in 1981, that Bobby Sands gave his life in, and 10 other men gave their lives in their struggle against British rule in Northern Ireland. So what I actually want to play for you right now, just to kind of give you a sense of what was at stake back then and what these men were fighting for, I'm going to play a documentary, an Irish documentary, about the Blanket Men, as they called themselves, because, of course, as part of their strike, they refused to put on prison uniforms because they were political prisoners. They refused to be criminalized and treated as common criminals, and so they refused to wear the prison uniform. And so what they did is they would go around wrapped in blankets, and these men were willing to give their lives for their cause, you know, and fight for the dignity that is part of every human being. So I'm going to play this documentary for you now. And this documentary interviews participants in those strikes. and talks about the conditions they were under and why they were fighting. And this is all very important to remember. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
By 1976, the conflict in the north of Ireland had claimed over 1,500 lives. In its war against the Republican movement, the British government's focus shifted to the prisons. All those convicted after 1st of March 1976 were to be treated as criminals and held in a new prison, the H Blocks.
They tried here to force the prison gear on me in the reception area. I resisted.
And he said, put the uniform on. And I said, not putting uniform on because I'm a political prisoner and not wearing no prison uniform.
It went without saying Republican prisoners did not view themselves as criminals. Never did, and they never will.
Government standing against the wall and strip off and put my clothes under a brown bag, and I'd strip down in my underpants. And the guy came out again and says, I said strip, get the fucking heap off. So I stripped off naked through the underpants into the bag.
You were standing in the circle in front of all these screws, forces stripped naked, and you were just all the usual snide remarks, the jeers, the jokes, all the usual rubbish coming from them.
There can be no question of political status for someone who is serving a sentence for crime. Crime is crime is crime. It is not political, it is crime.
The talk was that H3 was not the block to go to. If you could avoid H3, you'd be doing all right. I just heard them shouting, H3, and I just remember, oh God, you know, that's what I didn't want.
I was trailed by the hair, kicked into the classroom. I was stripped naked. They threw me a towel. They gave me a towel. And even when I was trying to walk with a towel, they kept pulling the towel off me when they'd bring me down to the cell.
I can remember walking down the wing and you feel very awkward for a start if you're walking no clothes and no shoes on, so it's a bit awkward walking anyway. But the other thing was, you know, what do you do with your hands? Do you put them over your braces as if you're... Then that feels as if you're embarrassed, you know, but at the same time, you're not going to sort of march down the wing, you know, your arms are there, because that's not how you're feeling either. So I remember sort of feeling, you know, your hands were like lumps of lead just by your side somewhere, you know.
Refusing to wear the uniform, the men wrapped themselves in blankets to hide their nakedness. And so began the blanket protest. It was to become one of the most remarkable prison protests in history. This is the story of the men who lived it, what gave them hope, how they lifted their morale, and what kept their spirits alive.
In the H Blocks, you were locked in a cell, and because you were a protesting prisoner at that particular stage, at the early stage of protest, you were able to get out of your cell and go to the toilet. That was about it. If you took a visit, you were able to get out of your cell. If you went to mass, you get out of your cell. Other than that, we were confined to our cells 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, etc. So I remember, this is me. I mean, here, this is me. This is the H Blocks.
I think the first number of years, you're still very much ahead, still very much on the outside. So it's a Saturday night, you're thinking about what you would have been doing on a Saturday night, or what your mates are now doing, or you'd be thinking about your family, or what was going on there, or the places you were starting to go, because you're starting to hear new things and be curious about things. So now it's about also the things you would do, which we never would have thought of when you're outside. So the outside world is a big occupation. The thing is, I mean, I had a pace up and down the cell for about 10 hours a day, and that's that's a lot of time to be, and you're just thinking thoughts, imaginary thoughts. You're doing things about Irish and such like, but you've. You'd end up, I suppose, holding totally.